along in my automobile. My baby beside me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile. My curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go. Riding along in my automobile. I was anxious to tell her the way I feel.
10 years ago, my father died of a sudden heart attack while he was out hill walking. 5 years later, my mother got a terminal cancer diagnosis and passed away within 3 months. Over the years, I find I think about my parents most often when I am in the car, alone on a long journey. Earlier this year, I decided to take some passengers with me. My dad's sister Mary and my mom's sister Mary. The Marys. My Marys.
We grew up in Bettystown in Eastmead. I was born on the Eastern Road. We moved to, my dad and mum bought a pub then in 1960, and we moved in when I was two. We lived over a pub, and mummy at one stage did a bed and breakfast in it. And there were 8 bedrooms, so I think there were 4 of them turned into B&B. Like, she worked very hard in the shop. There was a shop called Cozy Corner, and a girl used to come out then and she'd look after us during the summer. So Mum and Dad could work, and Daddy worked in the bar, and it was very, very busy in the summer because an awful lot of people from Northern Ireland and from Dublin used to come, and they'd stay in Bettystown in the caravan. There were 2 caravan parks there, and they'd stay in the caravans, and yeah, it was really, really busy. And they were very strict. You were slapped, you know, if you did something wrong, you were slapped. Like every other child, and wooden spoons were used, but you'd rather get the wooden spoon there than my father's hand, which I did get a few times. But they were good, they were very fair, and like you didn't tell lies and you didn't disobey or steal or anything like that. Like we were taught well.
My father is a psychiatric nurse that had a small farm, and my mother was a psychiatric nurse, and they met in the local psychiatric hospital, St. Columbus, in Sligo. And my father had the house and land bought 2 years before he got married, in 1948. My father's salary wouldn't have been, it was very small for a psychiatric nurse, but he had a permanent job. There was always, you were sure there was money coming in every month. And also, the land was 26 acres of land, and he kept a few cows and sent milk to the creamery. So we were depending on the cheque coming in every month from the creamery as well. And also he sold cattle as well. All women had to retire as soon as they got married, the marriage band, I think at that, which was known at the time. We walked to school, we had walked a full mile to school every day and a mile back every day. And also when we came home in the evening time, Dad was working, so we had calves to feed, so we had our dinner. And then we had to go down to the field and feed the calves, and then also bring sticks back from the wood for the fire. And also, Mum was in bad health, so she wasn't able to do much housework, so we had to clean the house as well. And once that was done, we had evening tea about 7 o'clock, and they were into the lessons after that.
We moved in 1968. Daddy sold the pub. He bought this farm here in Cooper Hill. He did a dairy farm, but I think that was in latter years. And first it was a vegetable farm, and he built glass houses. He grew strawberries. He supplied the Dublin market. He was really, really worked very hard. We worked in the glass houses all summer, just like picking tomatoes. And then like before the tomatoes were ripe, there was an automatic watering system, but you had to take the shoots off the plants. Like, we worked, but we were very well paid. I remember, like, every Saturday I'd go to Drawdown to spend my money. I'd buy records and clothes, you know, just never saved.
I was 9 years of age when my mother had major brain surgery in Dublin, and she was pregnant with Joe, my younger brother. And I remember for about 2 years before that, Mum had awful back pain as well. So I really have very little knowledge of Mammy being in good health. All I saw as a child is sickness. She died in 1968, 52 years dead this year. I was 16, Una was 13, Joe was 7. My young Joe to this day doesn't remember Mammy.
But anyway, she had liver cancer. We didn't know that, but she had a big operation in March. A professor was over from London and he was in a hospital in Dublin, and he came down to Drogheda and he just opened her and closed her and said no. But we didn't know. Daddy told us in May that she was going to die. That's just what he said. He only told Tony, Pat and I. He didn't tell Ronan or Judith. So, I remember the morning she died, I went and told Ronan and he just got such a shock, you know. He would have been 15 and Judith 11. Yeah.
Una went to college. She always wanted to be a teacher. Una got the exams for the Sligo County Council, and Dad was quite anxious for her to take the county council. Luna said, no, I want to be a teacher. So, in all fairness, Dad, respect what you want. And she said she wanted to go to college. So Dad paid her way to college. Una worked very hard in college. And I remember when she came home from college, I remember in Dublin we're talking, and Dad was alive at the time. And when she passed her exams, and she said, I worked so hard for my exams, I was afraid to fail my exams because Daddy was paying for it. But she enjoyed life at the same time. She had a very good life. All I used to hear her talk about is the skiff. That's where they socialised. And they had parties, and she had house parties. She had a good life. She had a good social life, but she worked hard. When she moved to Drogheda, she was looking for a teaching post job. She took a train up, went up herself to Drogheda. She did an interview and she got it. That's how all happened. So she was there since.
Mam used to tell this story from her and Dad's early years. It was after their second date and Dad had gone to see Thin Lizzy at Slane over the weekend. The next week, Mam was in the staff room kitchen, and on the table looking up at her was Dad's face blown up on the front page of the local paper. She was like to her friends, oh my God, I'm dating that man. Sometimes when I remember my parents, I like to think of my dad as that bearded festy, and of Mam as a girl, just like me, sitting, laughing with her friends, talking about boys.
There's a girl, Jacinta, she was a teacher in Dunnycarney, and she'd be a friend of Magella Hiller. It's a very good friend of Magella's. And there's another girl that was a teacher with them, and she had a house party, and that's where they met.
That time Una didn't say too much, you know, it was kind of kept rather kind of secretive, but they met at a house party, and all I remember is that he had a motorbike shop. And I think he had long hair and a beard and leather gear, you know, seemed to be kind of, would that be kind of Una's style that time, young, trendy, you know, at that time. And she brought Tony down to Colroy. I do remember the first time I met Tony, lovely lad, very nice, lovely, you know, and very nice, very sociable, had great social skills, and, you know, and got on very well with Dad. You know, they clicked, yeah, and he clicked with the family. It was a click there from the very beginning, yeah.
I do remember the first time meeting your mum. I think we were in the Rossnery. We used to go to the Rossnery every Sunday night, usually after a Gaelic match. I think I met her around 1980. I remember she had a purple knitted dress.
Yeah.
That colour of purple, kind of, that's there. Yeah. They got married in Sligo and it was 24 degrees. It was a scorcher. Really, really, really hot day. Your mum walked to the church just down the road. And I remember your granddad, Paddy Cunningham, saying that he'd like to welcome all the people from the east of Ireland.
They had walked her down to the road. She looked fabulous. She looked very well. She did her own makeup and all. And she looked absolutely fabulous. A beautiful day. And she walked to the church. And it was absolutely beautiful, certainly. And then when we came out then, and there was... which we didn't expect, but the bikers were at the wedding, and of course they bought the motorbikes and they did a biking parade to Sligo with the bride and the groom after them in the car. I think there could be about 7 or 8 or 9 bikers, and this was very unusual for our parish, and I'm sure the whole parish stood out looking at these bikers because Tony was in the motorbike club at the time as well, as having the motorbike shop. In those days, the bride and the groom didn't stay around the hotel that night. They left the hotel. And those days, you got a second rig out. The going away rig out was just as important as the bridal rig out. You'd change it into your go away rig out, and everybody was always interested to see what the bride was going to wear. Is it a suit or a dress or what? We all dressed up to go away on the honeymoon.
Yeah, I do remember you all being born. Yeah. Sean, I remember probably his birth more than any of them, because I went over to Pauline. We were waiting for Sean, like your mum was in labour all day, and we were waiting for Sean to be born, and no sign, and we started drinking Baileys with brandy in it, which is called, I think, a Belfast Bomber. It's a lovely drink, but it's really, really strong, and but Pauline didn't drink Baileys. I don't think she ever drank it again. She was very sick the next day. But Sean was born anyway around 2:30 in the morning. Or 2 o'clock in the morning, around that time anyway. So we were waiting all night for a call. Yeah. Yeah, they were very good, like very, very proud of you all. When we used to go out, now we used to go out on a Sunday night now, and they'd be coming with us, and sometimes now your mum would be talking, she'd be talking with Sarah, she'd be talking with Sean, she'd be talking with Deirdre. Talking with Emer, I was like, Jesus. And you'd be saying, holy God, did you ever talk about something else? No, but yeah, they were great. Your mum, she used to, well, you know yourself, she was never off the road, running you here, running you there. She'd go to school, she'd bring you home, she'd bring you to music, she'd bring you swimming. You know, she was never off the road. They would have saved her, like, every year to go on a foreign holiday, and you went off camping in France every year. And that was like big sacrifice, and like lots of saving, lots of getting together, 6 of you heading off, you know.
I've 20 years of memories with Dad and 26 years with Mum. A collection of shared experiences formed still frames in my mind. And yet I refer most often to one snapshot that best captures the portrait of our family life. Over and back the road to Sligo, the ferry to France. 6 of us happily packed into a Peugeot estate. Of course, a sing-song to pass the time. Dad, Dad, do our favourite one! The 4 of us cheer from the back. Mam is laughing in the passenger seat. Then Dad does this thing where he runs all his fingers over the steering wheel as if to play the drums, and launches into the Tony Rooney rendition of Elvis Presley's Blue Suede Shoes. Only 5 people in the world would consider his version better than the original, but I feel mighty lucky to be one of them.
Well, it's 1 for the money, 2 for the show, 3 to get ready, and I go, can't go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but stay over my blue suede shoe.
Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do, but not, honey, lay off them shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Let's go, cat!
I was sitting in the front sitting room chatting with Margaret, and I lit the fire, and Martin came over to me and he said, Tony Rooney is dead. I just went numb. I said, Martin, what are you after saying? And he said, Tony Rooney is dead. I just bawled, cried.
She couldn't accept it at first. I think the suddenness, Sarah, I don't know whether it's good to have a sudden death. It's good for the person, but really, probably for the first year, she nearly, like, as if blaming Tony for leaving her. She used to keep on saying she hated phones and she hated, she wouldn't have a mobile, you know, she'd have it, but she'd be turned off in the bottom of her bag. And she used to say, well, sure, I have to have it now. I'm the only parent now. I have to be responsible, you know. And, you know, she if any of them want me or any of them want to ring, I just have to be the end of the phone. And she didn't like that either, you know. I remember her doing the water aerobics with Pauline and Mary. They used to go and they used to bring her, and that was kind of, it was a night out, you know, it was get out of the house, do something kind of for herself.
She had a tough, it was not easy, you know, it was from one thing to another with her now. It wasn't straightforward. She had an ingrown toenail, and she had went to the doctor, and she had antibiotics for 3 weeks. And the antibiotics didn't work, and that when she went back to the doctor, he said to her that he was referring her to a dermatologist, and that the dermatologist took a biopsy and told her it was a lesion. She went back, I think she got the word that she had to go to have that toe amputated, and just queried it a melanoma. So anyway, she went down and she was proceeded, and she had the glands all removed. And she did well, I think, for 9 months. And then the next thing, when they started on the scans again, there was a spot under her lung, and then it went to her liver. It just was downhill. Then she went for the scan anyhow. I was ready to go for work. I remember it well. It was in March, February or March. I was just going out for work when I got the phone call here from Moon at 11 o'clock. And she said, how are you? And I said, that's bad. I said, where are you? Are you at school? To say to her, no, I'm here in St. James's. She said, and after getting the scan results, she said, I'm riddled.
She was going to be 60 at the end of February. Pauline, the women here on the road kind of were Pauline, Mary and Anne, and Mary Beakey and myself. We went to see Big Maggie in the theatre in the Olympia in the afternoon, in the matinee, and then we went for dinner in this place, and then we walked back up Grafton Street and we went into the Westbury for a cocktail. Then we went off the next day and we went shopping. But we had a lovely morning and we came home early afternoon, and yeah, she had a great time. And that was the 9th of February, the 9th and 10th of February or something like that. And that was the last time she was well and able to eat and able to drink. Yeah. To watch somebody suffering and going through cancer and grasping for good days, like, you know, your mum had, she never had a good day. She never had a day that she was well enough that she could go out for lunch, that she could kind of say, well, come on, we'll go out for lunch.
The doctors want to speak to you that day. And I went out for a walk when I came back, and Una said, they're gone, to the doctors. And she said, you know yourself now. I said, well, what, Una, what do you mean? No, she said, you know well what they're going to say. Una knew well. And when you came in and said it, told her, you know, you told her up straight, and I was there. You were all crying. She never cried. And that was on a Wednesday. Sean was finished with exams the next day, Thursday. Martin and I went up to do it again on Friday. And she wasn't well. Sunday, I went over to Mass and came back. And Deirdre rang me to say that she said Mammy has deteriorated. She got a phone call. So, and things are not good. So I said, Deirdre, we'll be up as soon as we can. She was very comfortable, you know, and it was important that we kept talking to her. And but she was very peaceful. And I thought it was very moving, the fact that her favourite priest came to visit her and how she died when he was there. I thought it was lovely.
We used to look up and the house would be in darkness and like just no light. And I would say like there used to be six people in that house. And I often think of Tony now. Nearly every Saturday afternoon he'd come in. He hated the garden. He hated doing it, but it had to be done. And he'd down to borrow something, you know. But yeah, we had good times. And even now, before the year that your dad died, between Christmas and the time he died, he probably came down here about, like, Jackson was at work, but he rang me and he'd say, I'll be out for lunch, I'll bring me own.
Owen and I wouldn't be 100% very close, but we're always there for one another. I miss her for advice. As a sister, things I love to ask, but I've no one to ask. I think of Mammy, Daddy, Una, and Michael, and Tony. I do pray as much as I can, but I pray it wouldn't be great if I pray for the holy souls that are included in the prayers.
Grief is a burden I have mostly found myself shouldering alone. Get up, get on, move forward. Try not to look back. In the car on my own, it's been easy to reflect on all that has been lost. But sharing the journey with the Marys, the focus shifts to all that we have. Strong roots, family near, stories to remember. Stories that keep loved ones alive, as long as we keep on telling them.
Why am I alive anyway? Yeah, what about God? Nobody can take away. Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears. My eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sick. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver. Got my blood, I've got life.